This is a spiritual reading being given for Hank Arkestein on Saturday the 27th of December 2025 in Victoria, Australia by John Rawson. We stand within the Hall of Memory, and the Book of the Soul is given into our hands. And the Book of the Soul is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations you have entered into since the soul first commenced this physical journey, this exploration of the physical world so long ago. And the book contains records of each incarnation. It's a thick book. So your soul has experienced many, many lives. But does each soul that came into incarnation in the primordial days of spirit has its own unique characteristic? One might say that souls are all different coloured sparks thrown out by the fire of the Creator, and as they fall twinkling into incarnation, then the colours and the qualities of each star will create and structure the incarnation. Now, as a token of the uniqueness, the Book of the Soul, as I hold it, has a few distinguishing characteristics. And the first is the colour of the book, and it's a beautiful lightish blue. And as I look at it, it actually looks a bit like water, beautiful blue lake or beautiful blue sea. And the colour indicates, firstly, your strong connection to the spiritual world, so that from incarnation to incarnation, the memory of spirit is strong within the soul, and you will feel drawn so often in incarnations to the spiritual path, whichever form that might take, whether it's in Egypt as the priestess in the temple of Isis, or whether it's as the German nun in the 14th or 15th century. But of course spirit can express itself in so many ways, and it doesn't necessarily mean that all your incarnations are religious, far, far from it. If we have a very religious incarnation, we tend to balance it a little bit later by having a bit of a reaction to that, so that the soul also needs to experience the quality and the visceral nature of the spiritual worlds from time to time. Oh, sorry, the physical worlds from time to time. So, but nevertheless, the theme of the soul, the purpose of the soul in coming into incarnation in the very beginning, was to bring a quality from the spiritual worlds. And because your soul incarnated with that quality, it never forgot spirit. And therefore, you have the capacity to create a bridge or bridges to the spiritual worlds, not just for yourself, but for other people. And so we would see incarnation, for example, in, I think in Tibet, in about the 10th century, where you were in a male body and you dealt there with with death. And I guess that that's to do with building bridges as well. But in that incarnation, you were in charge of the death procedures of taking the bodies to be eaten by the birds. So there are only bones left, and you would guide the soul into the spiritual worlds through the voice and through the playing of musical instruments, like an instrument like a trumpet, and also by beating a little drum, not a great big drum, but a little drum made some kind of rawhide, and it's only about that big, and it had a little mallet, cloth mallet, that you would beat it with, and that would create a sound, so to speak, that the soul could follow within the darkness and within the visions that were rising up within that soul. So in that incarnation, you were very much a bridge, or you created a bridge to spirit. And I would think that much of your work in this incarnation, when you finally discover that work, which I think you have in the past 30 or 40 years, much of your work will be bridging gaps for people. And of course, we know that you play the harp so beautifully, and the therapy that you do with the harp is very, very healing, and again creating things to spirit. Now, I'm coming back to the Book of the Soul, because the second characteristic of the Book of the Soul is that it has a picture on it. And as I look, I said that the colour was like the sea, and as I look, the sea comes to a very, very a huge island, I think I'll call it. And there, beside a temple with a sort of a domed roof, there's this immense statue. It's a bit like the Statue of Liberty, but it's much, 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 much bigger. And it's a female figure, and she holds in one hand a torch. And she holds it up to the heavens, towards the spiritual worlds, and the other hand is pointed downwards towards the earth. And the statue represents the, what would I call her, the Great Mother. It's a feminine figure, not a masculine figure. And the temple that she stands beside is the Temple of the Sun. Now, this is the age of Atlantis. So we are being given an insight into the purposes of the soul coming into incarnation. And the first aspect of this, and I've already mentioned the connection with spirit, but the first aspect of this is that there is a connection with the feminine, the aspect of the Godhead, however you want to call that aspect, whether you want to call Mary or Isis or whatever name, but there is a connection there. And there's an overshadowing, if you like. And that doesn't mean that in this incarnation you'd have to be a mother and have 10 or 12 children. No, what it means is that in this life you incarnated to nurture and care for souls. And the statue, by the way, is not a physical statue. It's an etheric force. And because the mother is the healing principle, it means that this life should have a connection or be dedicated to healing. And since it's on the etheric levels, not in a physical way, so that you wouldn't be a nurse or a doctor or someone dealing with a physical body, and not in an astral way, so that you wouldn't be a psychologist or a therapist, But on the etheric levels, and that's wherever creation and creativity is expressed within the world. Marcel Marceau said that entertainers and performers and musicians are planetary healers. So that the healing in that is your purpose in this incarnation is going to be through creativity, creation, art, beauty, music, and particularly music. And you probably know that you were in the healing temple in Egypt about 5,000 years before Christ, after the, well, it might have been earlier, might have been about 10,000 years before Christ, because it was after the final Atlantean exodus, when Atlantis sunk beneath the sea. And here we see you in a female body, and you were playing a little instrument like a very small harp, sort of like a lyre, but it's very small, and you would just pluck little instruments, sorry, little strings, and you would get these beautiful silvery tones. And then you had a pair of little gold cymbals that you would clap together, again with the rhythm that we saw in the Tibetan life. And your work there was to guide souls into incarnation when they had been expelled from the physical body by the forces of Atlantis. So there's an incarnation where you put your connection with the power of healing into practical reality. And again, you were working a lot with souls. It would be, I don't know whether you work in this incarnation with people who have advanced stage dementia or Alzheimer's disease, where the soul has basically left, but it can't depart into spirit. It's still held on by the karmic cord, so it's not time to go, but neither can it communicate with the through the astral, because the astral has become hardened, so the etheric is no longer accessible, so that the person can no longer think in normal terms and becomes very forgetful and usually loses cognitive function. And that's where music is very healing, because it softens the astral and the etheric for a little while, so that the soul can communicate again and perhaps communicate with its loved ones. Then the final aspect of the Book of the Soul, as I hold it here, is that it has a cover. And, well, so I've already said it has a cover, but it has a name. And the name, as it appears across the centre of the book in beautiful gold calligraphy, is the Liberator. So that from life to life, the work of your soul is to bring freedom to other souls. The life there, I think in the first century after Christ, where you're in a female body, you're a Samaritan Jew, so that you're not in Jerusalem. And yet there's a connection to the Christian movement, the new Christian impulses. And you meet one of the missionaries, and I think his name was Andreas or Andrew, and you decide to leave your community and go off with this person, which was a terrible thing to do in those days, because women should stay at home. And even though you'd had a couple of husbands, you were then a widow, you left your property behind, or actually you didn't, you sold up your property, which is interesting, and you took it away. And that was a bit upsetting, because you left your family behind, and you left them very little money. Mind you, the lazy beggars, they could go out and work for themselves anyway, but you were the money manager in that, so you took this money out of the community and out of your family to go off and to experience the reality of the Christ impulse in those days. And it's interesting, because there is a karma associated with what has been going on in your life, with the confrontation, if you like, with the government bureaucracy. And it's quite complex, because normally speaking, our karma, as you know, is complete at the age of 49, and from the age of 50 onwards, which for most of us now is quite a while ago, we are working on, as Mario would say, creating karma. He used to say, I never think about paying karma, I think about creating karma. So we're working, and every 7 years, the Brotherhood, the spiritual beings, whatever you want to call them, places a task in front of us, about approximately every 7 years. And we have to work with that. And so that after the age of 50, there's an arc, especially in the life of a priest. And you move from one work, one set of works, to another. And sometimes they might be things like you finish up a relationship, for example. You bring it to a conclusion that should be done in love and peace, rather than in conflict and anger, which is what happens when we conclude relationships earlier in our lives, before the age of 49. After the age of 50, hopefully we've learned enough wisdom so that we can use our spiritual understanding and our spiritual knowledge to create a more spiritual life for ourselves. And then perhaps you get an opportunity in a work sense or a creative sense. And then perhaps you get you meet with a group of people that are going to enhance your life, and you're going to enhance this. And so I'm just giving you examples that after about the age of 50, life is a series of tasks. It's not a series of karmas. But there is an interesting thing that happens when we approach the age of 80. After the age of 80, we are allowed to redeem or rebalance karma from future lives. So it's as though before we come into incarnation, we meet with the Lord of Karma and we consult with him. And together we plan our life. And you're going to meet this person, you're going to travel overseas, you're going to meet your spiritual teacher, you're going to learn to play the harp. You've got all these things on this document, so to speak. We sometimes call it the sacred contract. And by the time you get to the age of 49, all those items on the sacred contract, they should be completed, ticked off, one by one. And that's why after the age of 50, you can go on and you can create new experiences and create new positive karma. But when you get to the age of 80, that's actually, for Some souls are very amazing and exciting era, because spirit will give us an opportunity to pay forwards, if you understand what I mean, that karma that you would have come into future incarnations to balance, you can actually do that now. And I think, from what I observe, that the experiences of the last years, probably particularly in the last 6 months, are a paying back of karma that you would have had to come into incarnation next life, or the life after, or perhaps 10 lives hence, in order to balance. So therefore there is a lot of stress and a lot of emotional intensity, because that's what, of course, karma does. And there is a certain aspect to repaying this karma, and that is that how can I put it? The incarnation you had as a Samaritan woman, where you took your wealth out of the community, that's a little bit of it. Incarnation around about the 10th or 11th century in Italy, where you're in a male body and you are an archbishop, I think, archbishop, cardinal, whatever, very high in the Catholic Church, and you're obviously in a male body there because only men could be priests, officers in the Catholic Church. And as I see, you're very fat, very, very, very big. And the reason for that is that you just loved everything. Food, wine, any indulgence you adored, you satiated yourself with pastries and with sweets, and you would hire the best cooks. And you also had a huge fetish for artistic beauty around you, and you had the best artists of the day come and redesign the palazzo where you were and create beautiful mosaics, and there were paintings of you. Your name in that incarnation was Leo, but I don't think it was a Pope Leo. I think it was just your name, Leo, short for Leonardo, I would anticipate. Now, you paid for all of that indulgence by sort of embezzling money from the church. And it was really an easy con for you to convince yourself of, because you decided that you were the church. So any money that came in from the church properties, the farms, the rentals, all the investments and the collections, that had to come to you. And you thought, well, this is fair enough. I should take my fair share of this, because I'm the head of this business that's going on. And you were actually caught and discovered the embezzlement was revealed, and you lost your position, and as penance you had to go and become a monk, an ordinary monk. You were lucky you didn't spend the rest of your life in one of those horrible monastic prisons, but perhaps the authorities thought that this would be punishment enough, and you had to go into a mendicant or begging order, so that going from controlling all the incredible income and wealth, you had to spend the rest of your life begging for food and for scraps. Now, the connection with the financial woes with the Centrelink, I think, is like this, that you are completing the karma that you had from that Italian incarnation, because you left that incarnation with a deep sense of shame and remorse. In future lives, you were scrupulously honest. And perhaps in this instance, you've perhaps been a bit too scrupulous, a bit too honest, because you're trying to adhere to the letter of the law and do absolutely the right thing, when the spirit of the law probably would be more inclined to say, well, Ankh, you earn as much money as you like, up to a certain point, because the more money you earn and look after yourself, the less the government has to look after and support you. And if you start reporting excess income, then we have to use our resources, which are limited, and we have to mobilize people, we have to get lawyers in, and so that then the whole bureaucracy gets really upset. The wheels that have been set in motion by this karma would have probably started to come into action about halfway through 2025, especially about June or July, August. That's a very disturbing time, or perhaps a bit later. And the emotional energies that are radiating into you are twofold. First of all, there's an energy of restriction, and so that you're going to feel that your actions are limited and restricted, and you're having to live within boundaries, or perhaps impose boundaries on yourself that are very difficult to work with. But the other energy that's coming in is the opposite. It's to do with needing to be an individual, needing to do things your way. And so there's a bit of a clash. It's as though there's a clash between what the state wants, which is the restrictive bounding energy, and what your soul wants to do, which is to be free and not to carry around any sense of guilt, but to know it's done the right thing. Well, you have done the right thing, and I suspect that the process will work its way through. I don't think you're going to lose your house. I think that things will settle down in 2026, and there's sure still some ups and downs to go, particularly around February, April. But I think after April, March, April, May, that most of that, if not all, of that pressure is going to lift for you. And that will come as a great sense of relief. Well, we really should have a look and see what the Book of the Soul, else the Book of the Soul, has to tell us. Because I understand that you want to know your standing as a spiritual being. I guess that the best way to say that is that in the priesthood, as we used to say, The pay is pretty poor, but the superannuation package is good. That as priests, if we live a life of genuineness and honesty, which is what you were trying to do so hard with Centrelink, Mario had a saying about that. Something like you don't get too spiritual to be of any earthly use. And he was very capable, by the way, of utilizing the bureaucracy and the rules to wherever it would benefit the centre. He didn't mind cutting a few legal corners at all. Because there's a difference between legality and justice, between the law and what is right. And sometimes the law gets it wrong. So I think you'll be able to go forward in 2026 with the whole issue settled. I don't see you moving back to Holland, by the way, but you will have to bring things to a conclusion in the first 5 months of 2026, which I think you will. But we'll open the Book of the Soul and we will have a look at the picture that the soul draws, which the book opens to the current incarnation. And on the right-hand side, the soul draws a picture of itself, which is the aura colours. And there are probably very few changes in the aura since last time you had a reading, which was probably about 10 years ago, I think. And the first colour, I'll describe the colour so Melody can start on the aura chart, which is always a work of art. It's lucky you're not having to work with my very limited drawing skills. But the first colour is orange. And that means that your life is dedicated to Christ. So let's just go through these colours, the soul energies, because the only way to measure one's standing, if you want to put it like that, is have I, in this incarnation, have I expressed the qualities of the soul? So the first soul quality is the orange, the commitment and the connection to Christ and the experience of Christ within your life. It's the colour of someone who thinks a lot. Sometimes people with orange as the first colour tend to have a tendency to overthink and to theorise and to hypothesise and to live in the what ifs, or this could happen, what's the worst, what's the best. And so the orange is a very dynamic colour. It's the colour of red and the colour of yellow together, which have a lot of energy, the mental energy from the yellow and the manifesting creative energy of the red. And when you get that combination, you are an individual who can manifest in their lives. Sometimes we call that the manifester character. And the quality of that particular dynamic is that you need to inform the world. You need to be a communicator. You need to be a creator in this life. So the more you communicate, the more you connect, the more you express creativity, the more you start things, the more you establish things. Manifesting people are one of the few types of people, and it's a rare quality, who can actually start things from the beginning and get them moving. So you're a starter, a creator, a manifester, if you like, And you should communicate, you should tell people, because if you don't, the negative side of that is you get angry with yourself and with other people if you're not allowed to tell people. So I can really understand why you felt you had to inform Centrelink. You had to communicate with them, because if you didn't, you would have just had an anger growing inside yourself and getting worse and worse. And so at least you've got that out of the way. You've done what you needed to do. You've done the informing. You've done the communicating. And now all that energy that was rising up has to be allowed time to dissipate and be woven into the fabric of life. The second colour, purples. Very priestly colour, as you know, and relates a lot to previous, to incarnations as priest, as a monk, as a religious, spiritual person. I think it's the 19th century, the 1850s, where we see you in America, actually, in Boston, and you're, as I see you, you've got a top hat on and very well dressed, tails, sort of a striped suit, and in that incarnation you are, well, as I see it, you're a minister of a church in Boston, and the name of the church starts with A. It's like the Church of Saint Agatha, or the Church of Adolphus, or Adolf, something like that. And you were very good at making money for the church. I guess that was partly to make up for spending the money of the church in the incarnation as a cardinal. And you would, it was an Anglican church. I have to let you know, it's not a Catholic church. This is an Episcopalian church, I think is the term. And you would go round the wealthy parishioners, who were mainly, especially the ones who were female and widowed and had access to a large inheritance. You were very good at getting money out of them and financing the church. But then you had this other side, that you would sneak out of the church, so that even your own staff, you weren't married then, but you had a housekeeper, even your own staff didn't know where you were going, and you would take the money that you'd collected and you'd go to the slums and to the prostitutes and to people who were ill and destitute and dying, and you'd give them assistance, financial assistance, so they could pay for a doctor's visit perhaps, or perhaps a woman could pay for a mother's burial. And so you had a bit of a split personality in that incarnation. On the one hand, you were this debonair, handsome devil of a minister whom all the women adored. And on the other hand, you had this shadow life where, without any fanfare, you would go and assist people. And it's interesting that in this incarnation, the two things have to be brought together, but what's secret in some respects is probably the priesthood. Perhaps people don't know that you're a priest where you work, but they might know you as a musician. So therefore you're appearing on one level to give something, which is through the music, and as we've said, this is powerful in itself. But on another level, what you're giving is the priesthood. And the priesthood works even more powerfully, it when it's in silence. Church, priesthood, structure, organization, spirit, these are all quite different things. The priesthood is not connected with a structure or an organization, although of course that's out with our experience that we obtained our priesthood through an organization, through a structure. But in the end, that's not what the priesthood is about. The priesthood is about moving outwards in silence and in power. And you have, with those two colours, you have worked and you have given everything that you could to these aspects of your being. And the first two colours are what one might call the intentional layers of consciousness. It's how we where we set our ideals, where we focus on, where we create goals in the imagination. These are the powerful colours here. So just start imagining for yourself a future where there's no more hassle from Centrelink. Just put that out there. Don't have stuff in your mind going around saying, oh, this could happen or that could happen. Just put out there that all the hassle, all the conflict, if you like, has come to an end and there's peace in my life once again. I'm not saying it's an affirmation, I'm saying create it in your mind as a picture, as an image, and that should be something that you can move into in the next 6 months. The other qualities, very quickly, the the third colour, yes, light rose, lots of light rose, very sensitive, and very sensitive to other people, very intuitive, very much thinking or picking up other people's thoughts and energies there. You need, when you go out and interact with the rest of the world, you need to seal your aura. We've adopted the practice of the breastplate, and Melody can explain that to you later if you're not familiar with it, but seal your aura before you go out, especially if it's into a very physical, materialistic environment like Centrelink and discussions with legal people and all that sort of thing. Don't pick up on their anxieties because that will make you anxious in your turn. Orange in the head. Oh, lots of orange. Wow. The good thing is that there is a yellow vortex coming down, and that means greater clarity of thought is entering in. That will be really helpful when you need to sort out rules, regulations, policies, protocols, all these little details. And hopefully you're going to meet someone who's going to assist in that and help you sort things out in a sensible way. Greens from the shoulders. And this, the colours from the shoulders are almost what we don't know about ourselves. And when you've got the green there, it's not only healing and change, it is, it's music. And not just instrumental but also vocal music. If you ever get a chance to sing, even sing at home to yourself, even the old centre choruses, they can be very, very powerful. So make sure that you always have music in your life, facility to change and to move, and that what lifts you up, what raises you in this incarnation is the healing work that you do. And insofar as you've done all these things in your life, then when you get to the end of it, which hopefully will be a few years away yet, but when you get to the end of it and you walk through the gates, and Christ says to you, well, how did you go, Unc? Because he never tells you. You have to come up with it yourself. And he said, I think I did okay. There were a few things I could have done better, but on the whole, I think I did reasonably well. And the thing is, in spirit, you are never praised, except that Christ will say, "Yes, you did well. You did what you promised you'd do. Well done, good and faithful servant. Pass on." And that's what we can experience as priests, that we may not achieve fame and fortune and influence in this particular incarnation, but if we can influence and touch the fabric of other souls in a way that raises them up and heals them, then you've done a really good job. Symbol of the over-self hovers about 2 inches above the head.
Do you have cosmic colours?
No. Okay. No cosmic colours at this stage.
Thank you.
Symbol of the over-self, the individual in a blue robe climbing a mountain. I'll come back to that in a moment. Symbols in the aura. On the left-hand side, an angel carrying a mirror. In the middle, a candle, and on the right side, the individual carrying a mirror. And the three symbols represent energies from the past, the present, and the future. And the image from the past, an angel carrying a mirror, represents your connection with the temple in Atlantis, the temple of the sun, and indicates that your soul, which is actually represented by the angel here, your soul committed to being sealed, and so had, instead of being able to look out, it looked at its reflection, so that you were sealed in Atlantis. The symbol in the middle is a candle showing a very bright light. And that means that at this particular point in time, there's new light to be shed on your path, and that there's new understandings, and that what appears to be perhaps a blank wall or a gate through which you can't pass is going to dissolve, or the gate's going to open in the future, because the situation will not be solved per se, but it will be redirected, or it will be seen in a different, from a different point of view. And the image for the future, which is the individual looking at itself in the mirror, and that indicates that you're entering a period of reflection which will last between eight and ten years. And this is a really good sign, because it's where we review our life, and the more we review our life now, the easier and the Yes, the easier it is when we pass into spirit. The left-hand side of the book is a little verse, and it describes something of the purpose of this incarnation, and the title of the verse is The Liberator, or To Set Free. And it has, on the first line, the verse says, to experience chains. And the second line, to free self from the chains. And the third line says, to free others. So, if you want to know your status or your standing as a spiritual being, you just need to answer three questions. Have I fulfilled those three directives? To be bound in chains, so can you remember, can you experience a part of your life where you were not free, where you felt that you were bound by chains, perhaps of duty, of love, of obligation? And then, because your soul incarnated to feel a certain imprisonment, as though, to come to a point in life where everything that you did and that you had achieved actually was nothing more than walls and confines, like a prison cell. And so that the second achievement was to set yourself free. And then the third directive for this incarnation is to free others. So if you take time to think about that in the days and months to come, you will understand exactly how far you have achieved purpose in coming into incarnation. And the symbol of the overself shows you struggling up this mountain, but as I see it, the mountain's actually rather small. It's snowy and it looks a bit rocky and looks cold, but it's actually a small mountain. So just about at the top. In fact, you are just about. You're trying to get over the top and come down the other side. And what this means is that there's a challenge being placed in front of you. That's the mountain. But the mountain is not as big as you fear, and you are well on your way. In fact, you've almost overcome it. So that in the days and months to come, you will feel a greater clarity and a greater sense of direction, a greater understanding about where you're going. And in the end, we would hope that this mountain, when it's behind you, will not deter you from that purpose in this life, which is to set people free, because your weapons, your tools for freedom, are not a sword and a shield and bow and arrow. They are music, beauty, laughter, healing. And insofar as you express these qualities within your life, within your relationships with other people, you don't only set individual souls free, you set all of us free. And that is a wonderful task, and one at which I hope Spirit keeps you here to do for a good number of years to come. So shall it be.